You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, golf fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank right here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt, of course, with DJ Preach and OJ McDuffie looking fresh out of – I know you had an appointment today. We won't get into that, Juice, but we're glad you still made it in time. How you feeling, man?
Man, I feel bad that I had everybody waiting a little bit, man. I was in the dentist's office. My buddy, Dr. Randy Gofar, took a little longer than I thought, man, but I'm feeling better. I'm feeling better, but I'm excited, man. Big Seth, I'm excited, Big Seth. Man, we got another great guest, man, and we've been waiting for this one, man.
So it's going to be a great
recording.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know we went, you know, every other show we have to have a wide receiver in here, Bob. Juice always likes to have a wide receiver guest, but two shows ago. Yeah, I can't imagine why, but two shows ago we had a...
Don't forget, you win the big games with the defensive guys.
We know this. Exactly, we know. Right. We know, obviously, from what the Dolphins have been showing lately, right?
That's exactly right. So the voice you hear is Bob Baumhauer, a great defensive player, not just a good defensive player, but a great defensive player in the history of this franchise. So, Bob, welcome to the tank.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
We're excited to have you.
I like this, being in the fish tank. You know, I'm a fisherman, and I like the territory here.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, we love that you dove in. We just had your good friend A.J. Duay in a couple episodes ago, and we know, and we're going to talk about you guys being part of the same draft class, but we had a receiver in Brandon Marshall this past week, and so we had to bring it back to the defensive side of the
Oh man. So Bob, you know, we know you're known as an Alabama guy, but we're getting ready for the show. You know, I saw that you originally attended North Palm Beach Gardens High School. So you really do have some South Florida ties. Can you give us a little bit of your background and, you know, how'd you end up at Tuscaloosa High School? And do you still have some, you know, how rich are your South Florida roots here? Are you still South Floridian at heart?
I am. And actually, I was born in Virginia, and then we moved a good bit. I was born not far from where Dwight Stevenson was raised.
Oh, wow.
And we were just talking about that. I was born in Portsmouth, Virginia, near Norfolk, and Dwight's born just across the bay. And but then we moved up north. My dad was in the Navy. We moved up north to Toledo, Ohio, after I was a couple years old.
Ohio. Nice.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And then
that's where I'm from.
Dad was a Kirby vacuum cleaner guy. And we took a vacation to Florida when I was a freshman in high school. We fell in love with the Palm Beach area on that vacation. Found out that the Kirby distributorship for Palm Beach County was open. Told his boss, he says, I'm going to Florida with or without Kirby. We ended up going to North Palm Beach, Florida as a freshman. I went to Palm Beach Gardens High School. I was just teasing Nat about this because Nat gives me a lot of grief about the Crimson Tide. And we were just talking about it. I was actually a Palm Beach Garden Gator when I was in high school.
I knew I liked you, Bob. I got that Gator blood in him somewhere, Juice.
Yeah. And then Dad got another promotion. We loved South Florida. We lived in North Palm Beach, lived on the water, did a lot of fishing, loved everything about South Florida, like just, you know, the best. And then just before my senior year, Dad got another promotion, a large territory of the Southeast, and ended up moving to Tuscaloosa, Alabama as a senior in high school. And, turned out great. Go to Alabama, and I would probably never would have never ever thought about going to Alabama if I don't move up there. And then, play at Alabama and get drafted by the Dolphins, and I go back home. So it was a lot of fun.
Quite a journey. And we're going to get into all of that you just mentioned there at the end. But, you know, when you said Dad was in the Navy, I was like, okay, so he moved around. He was, you know, in the military family, but it was vacuum cleaner. Who would have thought vacuum cleaners would drag you all over the country?
Yeah. And you know, Dad was a special guy, and along with my mom, still living, she lives with me, and they just kept moving up. They just kept moving up, and it created opportunities. And then, you know, sometimes at the time I didn't see it as a positive because you're moving so much, but it ended up being the best thing could ever happen for me and Dad. They ended up in Alabama, and that's where, you know, I came back to Alabama. obviously, to, and that's a whole nother story why I came back. But everything works out for the best sometimes.
Well, seems as if it worked out for the best for you, and certainly worked out the best for the Dolphins ultimately. And you just talked about Alabama, and I'm looking over your shoulder there and can see the Great Bear still looking over your shoulder, which,
yeah.
That's right.
Which is pretty funny. That's right. But so talk about that. I mean, obviously you had a fantastic career, played under an iconic head coach. But what I was reading, it seems as if your recruitment, so to speak, to Alabama, or you finding your way there, was almost an accident. Talk about that. Talk about how you ended
exactly
up there.
Right. Because I didn't start playing ball until I was a junior year at Palm Beach Gardens High School. And then I moved to Tuscaloosa. And so I wasn't a guy that loved football, wanted to be a great football player. I didn't have that kind of vision for myself. And I was more into water and fishing, the beach and all that type of stuff. So moved to Alabama, played at Tuscaloosa High School, did not get recruited at all. I had one official visit that was to Auburn. They didn't sign me. And it wasn't until well after the signing date, it was either March or April, where Coach Bryant was watching some film of their top offensive line prospect for that they had signed. And we had played the school that this guy went to in the state playoffs. By the end of my senior year in high school, I was improving, getting better. This guy was their top offensive line prospect, and he had a really tough night with me.
Coach I Bryant like what he said. He had a tough night.
Yeah, he had a tough night. And so Coach Bryant saw that film and said, well, okay, we signed this guy. Where's the guy that's whooping his tail right now?
Right.
And so I had one scholarship offer, and it was Vanderbilt. I went up to Nashville, got a coach named Charlie Bradshaw, who had played for Coach Bryant in Kentucky, was the defensive line coach. They offered me a scholarship. I called home, told mom and dad I was going to sign. I love Nashville, had a good time. They said, don't sign. The coaches just called from Alabama. They want to when you get back. So I flew directly back to Tuscaloosa from Nashville. There were seven coaches waiting in a station wagon at the airport.
Seven of them.
Acting really nervous, and said, hey, do you mind going to see Coach Bryant? Now, nobody talked to me the whole year. Nobody recruited me. So I get this reception in Tuscaloosa at the airport. And it took me to see Coach Bryant. And he apologized, said, we hadn't shown you any respect. Didn't do this, didn't do that.
Wow.
But I want you to play for Alabama. And obviously, I jumped at the opportunity. And I was just, it was one of them fortunate things. Again, you know, mom and dad had put me in that situation by moving up there. So things worked out. And I went to the University of Alabama. And Coach Bryant continued to affect my life in a really positive way for a long time. Still does, actually, you know. Like you said, he's looking over me right now.
Yeah, he's clearly looking over you. And I love that he sat down. Well, first of all, I love that those coaches were nervous because they did not want to have to go back and tell Bear Bryant that they couldn't get it done.
What had happened is this was something that the trainer, the head trainer at Alabama told me later, is the defensive line coach thought I was going to walk on at Alabama. And I never thought about that. And he had told Coach Bryant that. And he says, if that kid signs with Nashville, this is what I heard Coach Bryant told Coach Donahue, if he signs with and he knew Charlie Bradshaw because he played with him. If he signs with Vanderbilt, some heads are going to roll. Coach Bryant was not happy. And you're right. I think probably because of that, they were nervous. And
that's what it sounds like. And the other follow-up I have on this, and I won't belabor the point, but you talked, I love that he said, hey, you know, we didn't show you enough respect. But what I also read was, as much as he clearly respected you, he struggled with your name for a little while.
Oh, yeah.
What's the deal with that?
Well, first, yeah. And to get to that point, though, I had to go a little ways. I had a good spring. They moved me to defense the spring of my freshman year. I had a great spring. But again, I didn't have like any kind of a vision for myself. So between spring and fall, I didn't do a lot to prepare to get better. Came back to camp and had a, you know, summer job, didn't have a lot of time to work out, came to camp not in great shape. Thought I was going to come back to camp as a starter. I came back, I was on last string. And after 3 days of being on last string, nobody talked to me, I quit. And
you quit? That,
you know, I had a great spring. I thought I was going to be a starter. Coach Bryant got word to me and my dad, they wanted to see me in his office. His 2 days were still going on. Real nice to my dad, greets him, says, come on in, Mr. Baumhauer, looks at me and says, what are you doing here? I said, I heard you wanted to talk to me. He says, well, I don't talk to quitters, but since you're here, get your butt in here. So he starts working me right from the get-go.
Wow.
Made me look at myself as a quitter, which I didn't at the time. And the first thing he asked me, he says, I gave him my spiel on why I quit. And he says, well, tell me something. What did you do between spring and fall to get better? And I couldn't answer the question. And it wasn't that I was a bad guy. I didn't think that way. And he went into, we went into a discussion where he said he expected me to try to get better every day, that everybody on the team at Alabama has to have that mentality. And until it meant more to me to make a commitment to be the best I could be, I wasn't going to be a starter. By the end of the practice, by the end of the meeting, I'm sorry, I was begging to come back. I came back, didn't start right away, earned a starting job the third or fourth game of the season, and actually had a really good game. And that's where the name thing comes in. Coach Bryant was famous for not being able to say people's names correctly. And so I'm watching the Bear Bryant show on Sunday with everybody else. And I had a good game. So I'm figuring he's got to say something on his show. And sure enough, he did. And they showed me making a couple sacks, and he goes, yeah, yeah, that's a good young prospect. We got Bob Bellhouse. You know, just butchered my name. And a guy named Charlie Thornton, who was the host of the show, he says, Coach Bryant, that's Bob Baumhauer. And I'm in there with all the guys. We're at Bryant Hall. They're all like, you know, giving me grief.
So he corrected him. He did correct him.
He did. And he says, yeah, well, whatever his last name is, he's going to be a good young one. And he learned how to say my name a few games later. So, yeah, it all ended up good.
Hey, well, Bellhouse is probably better than Quitter. And then clearly it became Baumhauer. So that's...
Well, that meeting changed my life. And I tell people that all the time. And wow. Absolutely changed everything about my life, changed the way I looked at things, gave me some vision for making a plan and just about everything I do. And you know, anybody that went to Alabama, whether it was Dwight, Tony Nathan, Don McNeil, Coach Bryant just had a wonderful way to take somebody that needed a little bit of guidance as far as making a plan for yourself and being able to work that plan. He had a wonderful way to get folks to think that way. And
awesome.
You know, back in the day, you guys probably remember, we had, I believe it was four or five guys playing on the Dolphins team back in the 70s and 80s. It was Dwight and Don McNeil and Tony Nathan, myself, a guy named Joe Carter came in for a couple of years. There's a lot of connections there between the two schools at the time. And then obviously Mike Shula ended up going to Alabama to play quarterback in the 80s.
And then held another position there as well at some point. So, you know, the ties run deep for sure.
Right.
Smart recruiting. I call that smart recruiting right there. You know, if you want to go get some players that can play, you know, you go to Alabama, man. And especially nowadays as well. It hasn't changed much, has it, Bob?
Yeah, well, I tell you, that was a tough year, you guys, when Coach Saban left the Dolphins and went to Alabama for me. I mean, that was tough.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, talking to Nat and the guys down there, not a lot of happy campers down there. And then being up here in the coaches show, we do the coaches show from Baumhauer's in Tuscaloosa.
Nice.
And, we've been doing that for a long time. And so, I got to tell you, Coach Saban has done a wonderful job up here. And he does a great job, not just with bringing good players here, but it's about good people, developing them, getting them ready for life after football. He does a really good job with that. He has a really high graduation rate. Obviously, he runs a discipline program. And like you said, OJ, he's the Alabama's culture when it comes to standards and commitment is as good a place as it's ever been.
I wonder how much of that pipeline between Alabama and Miami at that time had to do with Howard Schnellenberger, another local legend in coaching that obviously had was a part of Bear Bryant's string of championships, 3 and 5 years, I believe it was. And, you know, at that time was the offensive coordinator for the Dolphins.
There's a lot of connections there, you guys. I don't know if you heard the story, but Mr. Robbie actually agreed to terms with Coach Bryant to take the Dolphin job before Coach Shula did. And, there's a lot of books that have written up here I wrote about that. There's a long story behind that. But so there was a long relationship there with there's been a relationship with the Dolphins and Alabama for a long time. And then the Schnellenberger piece, you're 100% correct. Coach Schnellenberger was at Miami my rookie year. I believe it was the next year that he took the Hurricanes job and then, you know, put the Hurricanes on the map.
A nice little pipeline right there. A nice pipeline right there, man. I love that. But let's talk about 1977. You know, the Dolphins take A.J. Duay in the first round. They select you in the second round. after I think both you guys have played with Coach Shula, worked under Coach Shula at the Senior Bowl. And trust me, I know what it's like to move from legend to legend, you know, me going from Joe Paterno to Don Shula, right. You know, talk about your transition from Coach Bear Bryant to Shoes. And, you know, even though, you know, you're used to tough leaders, I mean, it's my understanding early on, you were asked to move from D tackle to nose and you weren't too happy about that. Let's talk about that transition a little bit.
You're 100% correct. And I was excited as heck to have the opportunity to play for Coach Shula in the Senior Bowl. And I think that probably had more to do with me, you know, going in the second round than anything. I started off the season supposed to be a pretty high pick, got hurt, played hurt the whole year, and my stock went down, went to the Senior Bowl, had healed up. But being able, AJ, both AJ and I feel that being at the Senior Bowl was the reason we ended up with the Dolphins, which is obvious. But when we got to Miami, the Dolphins had gone 6-8 the year prior. Coach Shula was actually having three-a-days. And three-a-days.
Crazy.
And I played defensive, what would be considered a defensive end today with Alabama, right? And so I get to Miami and they were short at the defensive line position. And AJ and I were basically going to be expected to contribute our first year. They moved me to nose and Manny Fernandez, that was his last year. And Mandy comes up to me, he goes, "Rookie, I feel for you." And they moved me to nose. That was the start of the end for me.
Thanks, Manny.
I'm having to hear all this negative stuff. And then you had Larry Little. You had Jim Langer and Bob Kuchenberg as the middle three. They destroyed me every practice. I mean, and I'm trying to learn the nose position. I was not a happy camper after a couple of weeks. Coach Scary, Mike Scary, who was my coach, was our defensive line coach at the time, kind of got a vibe that I wasn't a happy camper, pulled me aside, had a conversation with me, said, "Look, I think you could be a good defensive end, but we think you can be a great nose. We need you to master that nose position." And what happened is I did some thinking and I made a commitment to be the best I could be at that position based off of what I'd learned from Coach Bryant. And then with Jim Langer and with Larry Little and with Kuchenberg and with Coach Arnsberger and Coach Scary, I worked really, really hard at learning that position. And by the time preseason got there, I was thinking I couldn't play the position because I just couldn't get it done in practice. Mm. Then the first preseason game, I had a couple sacks real quick, and it didn't take me long to figure out that the guys I was practicing against every day were about three levels above anybody I was playing in the NFL.
You weren't going to see anything like that the rest of your career.
It was crazy. I mean, so I'm playing against these centers, and back then most of the teams had four man lines. So these guys weren't used to having somebody like me. I'm 6'5" and can run a little bit, and got, you know, I'm more of a tall, angular kind of guy. And these centers were really made for work the even man line and getting the backside linebacker. They weren't used to having somebody on top of them. And so my rookie year, I had a blast. And most of it was because Langer was kicking my butt in practice and Cooch was kicking my butt in practice and Larry Little was. In fact, we used to get into it in practice. And I remember one time we were into it and I heard one of the coaches say, let him go. Because they liked seeing that fire. They like seeing a little bit of intensity there. And, we ended up going 10-4, should have made the playoffs. And then that kind of restarted the whole playoff thing again. And we had a pretty good run there for a few years.
Yeah, pretty good.
Exactly. Yeah.
Think about that, though. You know, so I've heard in my day job, Bob, I run Jason Taylor's nonprofit organization. And so I've heard JT his whole career. He's talked about how when he came in as a rookie, getting his butt kicked by Richmond Webb every day, when he got to game days, everything was easier because of that and the work that he got against Richmond. I can't imagine having to go against three of those guys, you know, two who are in the Hall of Fame, one who absolutely the argument could be made that Bob Kuchenberg should be there as well.
Right.
And every day those guys are pounding on your asses. You're trying to, I mean, that's unbelievable.
I was unbelievable. A pinball, man. I mean, it was bad. And my confidence went down and, you know, but here, what was funny is after practice, they'd all take us young guys and, you know, we go get a beer and they'd talk about how this technique or that technique, I need to work on this, I need to work on that. And then next day we'd go to practice, they'd kick my butt again. And then they'd coach me after practice again. And Really neat culture there. And then another guy that really was helpful that year was Mike Colon, Captain Crunch. And Mike had hurt his knee in 76 and was trying to earn his job back in the training camp of 77 with, you know, and Bo Camper as well. Bo had hurt his knee in 76. And Colon was a very, very positive influence, as was Manny Fernandez. I had real long, pretty hair when I was a rookie. Manny took me to get a haircut. It was an old school barbershop. They butchered my hair. I mean, I came out of that.
I think Manny was setting you up. I think he told you, because Manny was great at the nose tackle position. So he was setting like you up there. He was setting you up with the hair.
He did. I said, Manny, why'd you take me there? He said, Manny, you know, I'm trying to let you remind you, you're a rookie, man. You're a rookie.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like. Well, he was on this show and revealed that his role as the Phantom and the pranks and what have you. So it sounds to me like the barbershop and everything else, you might have been a victim of the Phantom is what it sounds like.
Yeah, I tell you, and he was a hero. You know, the year they went undefeated, and I was living in South Florida then, to me, he was the MVP of that Super Bowl. I mean, he absolutely dominated that game, and he was playing a nose position.
Exactly.
And he was playing against you know, that was a pretty good offensive line, but he dominated. Manny absolutely dominated that offensive line and had a great game in the Super Bowl. I still like pinch myself that I couldn't believe that I had the opportunity to be, you know, around those kind of guys as a Dolphin, especially going to Palm Beach Gardens High School back in the day when I was younger.
That is crazy the way life works like that. So listen, we're going to have some more football talk, but before we go too far down the road, I do have a question for you about another relationship you have with another Alabama legend, and that's Joe Namath. Right. So for those who don't know you, Joe, you, another Alabama quarterback, Richard Todd, you guys in the 80s, I think it was, partnered and you opened up Bachelor's 3 in Fort Lauderdale. Right. And Joe had been, he had an entire career in the NFL. At that point, he was Broadway Joe. He was a legend. He was destined for the Hall of Fame when you came in as a rookie. So right. How did you guys, where was the connection? You clearly didn't play together at Alabama. How did you guys get connected? What was that relationship like, Bob? And I have to imagine there were some good times.
Yeah, I was a Joe wannabe. And Richard Todd was a Joe wannabe too. You know, Joe was the man back then. But Joe went to Alabama and then he would come back to Tuscaloosa every June and work out during June in Tuscaloosa to get away from everything. I went with an agent, my rookie year, a guy named Jimmy Walsh, and that was Joe Namath's agent. Richard Todd, who came out the year prior to me, the year before me, went with Jimmy as well. And Rich and I had become best buddies at school. And so I went with Jimmy as well. And then, you know, I didn't get to know Joe well when I was in college, but Joe lived in Fort Lauderdale during the offseason, right off of Oakland and Bayview there. Had a condo. So Richard and I bought a condo in the same building. And then Joe had a bachelor's degree in New York. He had one in Birmingham. He had one in Tuscaloosa. They had all closed. And Jimmy says, you know, with you guys staying here during the off season, we need to do one more bachelor's degree. And that's how I got in the restaurant business. As far as my first kind of experience with the restaurant business was the bachelor's degree in US 1 there in Fort Lauderdale.
And so did you guys spend a lot of time there? Were you and Joe? Oh, yeah. You said you wanted to
get Joe Wannabe. Well, yeah, we would go there and I'd have fun just watching Joe. You know, I'd have fun watching people watch Joe. But, you know, Reggie Jackson used to hang out there, Billy Martin, Tom Jones, the singer from back in the day. It was like Planet Hollywood before Planet Hollywood because of Joe.
Right.
And we had a disco in there. We had a really nice raw bar. It was a really neat restaurant, valet parking. It was right on US 1 in between Sunrise and Oakland Park Boulevard. And, you know, it was, I got to tell you, I mean, I was having a lot of fun for a while.
I bet it was a lot of fun. I bet it was. So here's a question, though. So Richard Todd, your business partner, right? And you guys are Alabama alum, but then he's also a rival. So what was that like to go and, you know, 82 AFC championship game,
right?
You're playing here in the Orange Bowl and you guys are fighting for the Super Bowl and you registered a sack in that game. Do all business agreements go out of the, you know, just off the table at that point?
Oh, yeah. But and it's interesting. Richard lives up here in Alabama. We see each other. But that was an interesting situation there because I'm playing nose. Richard's quarterback, he's walking right up to me every play. So we usually have a couple words before every play, you know, before he'd get under the center's butt there. And usually it was fun. But I'll tell you what, the Jets ran more damn screwy nose plays than anybody. In fact,
really,
he took me out one time. They used to put the tight end in motion, and just before the tight end would get to the center position, they'd snap the ball. The center set me up, and the tight end would come in and cut me. Back then, you could cut, you could chop, you could do it all on the nose. Crazy. And I used to have a few words with Richard about his play selection as far as some of those plays were concerned. But great guy. But I will tell you that whether it was Richard or I got the opportunity to play against Kenny as well, too, whether it was with the Raiders or when he was with Houston, my experience was you want to play better and harder against buddies like that than you do, you know, anybody else. So
makes sense.
Richard was the same way, obviously. It's just that competitive nature. And used to back in the day when we would play the Jets, we had Mondays off back then. I would stay in New York and hang out with the guys up there and then fly back the next day.
I bet those were good times too.
Those were good times too.
Man, speaking of good times, Big Seth, man, I have no doubt that, Bob, I know you enjoyed your South Florida living. And from what I understand, you know, you also loved a little bit east of South Florida living as well. Let's talk about the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Might take a trip or two over to Bimini.
Yeah.
You know, you guys talk about your love for the Bahamas. And I know before we got on, we talked about how much they love the Dolphins as well.
Right. Well, and that you're 100% correct. There's so many really great, faithful, loyal Dolphin fans in the Bahamas. But I fell in love with Bimini first. Got to know some of the folks over there. Became a Ernest Hemingway fan, and he was a big fan of Bimini. In fact, the book Islands in the Stream, the first chapter in that book is on Bimini. The next chapter is Cuba, and so just Bimini's 46 miles off of Fort Lauderdale. Actually, went on over there the first time with some friends. Richard Todd was on that trip on a dive trip. Now, I'm not a diver. They wanted to go diving. I fell in love with the water and snorkeling, and I like to fish. And so the combination of just how great the islands are, especially I like the out islands, the people over there are fantastic. And then obviously the water and the fishing and the things to do over there, it's still a love of mine. And then I got into this crazy restaurant business and got away from it for a long time. But about 10 years ago, and I've got four kids, 20 to 28, two boys, two girls. I really wanted to get them over there. I got back into boating, bought a boat, started taking them to Bimini, and I got them all hooked on the islands now. All my kids are just sick puppy dolphin and actually
outstanding.
Dolphin and Bahamas fan. In fact, I was there for the game, the Rams game, and bought some throwback jackets there from one of the souvenir shops there, and all my kids are excited to have their throwback jackets wearing their Dolphin stuff.
So you were just here for the Rams game. If that's the way the defense is going to play when you're here, Bob, you need to come into town more often.
Yeah, I was the honorary captain for that game. So I think it was because I was the honorary captain.
Got them fired up, okay? They brought it. That's right.
Somebody put a call in to somebody and make you a permanent honorary
captain? No, I got to tell you, I met Coach Flores at the Senior Bowl last year. He ate at Dolphins. I have a restaurant here in Mobile called Dolphins, D-A-U-P-H-I-N, the French way, right? Fell in love with him. He's got a plan. Coach Flores has a plan. And his assistants got a chance to talk to him. I got to tell you, if nothing else, they're playing so hard right now.
Right.
I mean, they're playing hard and they're getting better. And I love what I've been seeing. I love what I saw, you know, the tail end of last year. And the other thing is, it looks like they're having fun. And, you know, I just can't say enough about the job he's doing. So, and I'm
That's
a defensive
awesome.
Guy. You know, I was excited about Tua, you know, getting that first start.
That's right. Another Bama. Bama, here we go. It keeps coming back to us. That's
yeah.
right.
But, you know, you got Davis, you know, playing some good defensive line, another Alabama guy. Maybe we got another Alabama connection going, too. I don't know.
I
but
see that.
I got to tell you, he's got them playing hard.
Yeah.
And it looks like buy-in is there. And you know, you got to have buy-in. You got to believe in those coaches. And to me, it looks like they got 110% going on there.
Well, we hope it keeps it up, but I didn't know the secret was to get you out there going in for the coin toss. So,
they wouldn't let me go out on a coin toss.
Whatever they did, it worked. So we need to replicate that.
Yeah. Well,
I want to follow up. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Bob.
Well, what I was saying, on my card, my title now, I'm in the restaurant business, is head fry cook. So when, you know, I'm going around bussing tables still. I still do all that stuff, you know. So you get an opportunity to be honorary captain. That's pretty special, I really.
That's really cool.
Quite a promotion.
That's just a phenomenal job with all the things he does for us old guys. So it was really good to be back there and watch, especially, like you said, the way that defense played. Whoa.
That was something special.
Well, I'm going to tell you this too, Bob, but you know, you talk about you old guys, man. I'm an old guy now myself, man, but what you guys have done for all of us and what the guys did before you leading up to this, man, the way the organization keeps us all together, man, we're so tight, I think, as an organization, as an alumni, man. It's always so much fun to hear you guys like yourself or guys like, you know, even played after me talk about how much of a family is and how much we are, how close of a group that we are as alumni, because I don't see that with any other organization in any pro sports, man. And so I love hearing that. And I love hearing that you were back. I saw you on the Jumbotron, you know, when they announced the honorary captains, man. It was, I didn't know you were in the building though. So I'm glad you were in the building as well.
I came up. I mean, I came down. I brought a couple of the kids. I brought some of my folks, but I got to tell you, I agree with you 100%. And when my rookie year, I remember like it was yesterday, you had, you know, Greasy was still on the team, and you had, you know, Larry Little, and you had all of the folks that had gone undefeated, and most of them, and you still had a lot of the guys that had been there, some of them in the 60s when they made the transition when Shula came in there. And they really did take us under their wing to try to do everything they could to make us be the best that we could be. And I was just talking to a guy who played for the St. Louis Cardinals. His name was Tom Banks. He was a center for the Cardinals. Played against him a couple of times. We've become friends. But I told him, I was talking to him, and I was telling him I was coming back from Miami. And he went on and on, because he's known me for a while. He says, "You're so lucky to have played for the Dolphins, because, you know, he played for the Cardinals." He says, "I don't know anybody that does what the Dolphins do for you old guys." And I'm not exactly sure when that started as far as the great alumni programs. I know that nobody appreciates Nat more than I do, but I agree with you 100%. It's a family, and it's good. It's so good to see Coach Flores bring this enthusiasm and this fun, and everybody's talking about it. And, you know, Miami's a funny place. If you're not winning, those fans, they got a lot of other things they can be doing.
There's a few other choices out there for sure.
Ain't no better fans on the planet than them Dolphin fans when you're winning.
That's right.
They love their Dolphins.
Absolutely. So I want to go back to this thing on the water real quick and your trips to Bimini. You were telling us a story before we actually started the show about living on the water and having a boat and inspiring some of the other guys. And then you inspired Hugh Green unknowingly. Can you just share that story with us again?
Yeah, well, Hugh, you know, this was in the mid-80s, and Hugh got traded from the Tampa Bay Bucks over to Miami. And so I'd heard about it, and everybody knew who Hugh Green was. We used to play the Buccaneers in preseason every year. Didn't like it because they played it like it was the Super Bowl, you know, right. Season game in the damn Bucks. I mean, hey, guys, chill a little bit, you know, preseason. But anyway, that goes with the territory. But Hugh was a great player. He visited my house when I wasn't there. I was up in Alabama, met him in down at training camp. And told me, he saw I had a boat. He says, "I want to get a boat as well." We hooked up, became best buddies. My boat was called, I had a fishing boat called, it was a 65-foot Hallmatic called Big Mama. And then Hugh bought a boat. He kept it at my house. And then Dupe and Nat kept their boat at my house for a bit. So I
must have had a lot of dock space there, Bob.
Oh, yeah. I got some stories about Dupe and Nat, too. But that could be, that could be later. But anyway,
we can tell him here.
Hugh keeps his boat there. He names his boat Yo Mama 3.
Yo Mama.
Yo Mama. Yo Mama 3. And we still stay in touch. He lives in Natchez, which is, I don't know, about 3 hours from where I am here in Alabama.
Wow.
We stay in touch. But we became best buds. And he fell in love with the islands, too.
Now, how did he know? You said he visited your house when you weren't there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I found out through his visit that the guy I had there that I thought was a nice, young, quiet young man, you know, he liked to have parties when I was in Alabama. I didn't always know about him.
That was the spot. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. And this was up in Fort Lauderdale off Las Olas.
And, that's classic.
And I found out a lot through that conversation.
That's what it sounds like. That's what it sounds like.
That's outstanding.
That's great. So listen, another thing that we've been told that you enjoyed beyond just the water is that you enjoyed a good prank or two in your day. And so in fact, we spoke with our friend Stu Weinstein, who is a great friend of the Fish Tank. And certainly, as you know, from your days in playing, the pioneer of security directors across the NFL. But Stu said that there was once in a preseason game at Atlanta, there was the case of the missing Dan Marino equipment, and that, you know, people were going nuts and they couldn't find Danny's equipment. And Stu got a phone call that someone was holding the equipment hostage and wanted a ransom to be paid. Do you know anything about this story?
No.
Well,
we had a lot of fun back in the day, all kinds of stuff like that. And like we were talking about earlier, the whole family atmosphere of the Dolphins and Stu, I still get texts from him. He's just a really, really fun guy.
He's amazing.
Yeah, we yeah, and I'm sure that's it's great. Still that way. We just had now. What might have been a little different there is most of us guys were together for a lot of years and we got to know each other really well.
Right.
There was a lot of player movement back then. So some of that was a little bit different. Thursday nights, there'd be 20, 25 of us all going to dinner somewhere, you know, and we found a way. We had a good time when we end up in one spot like that.
So. That's what it sounds like. Well, Juice Stu said that he bought in. He thought someone really had stolen it, but they only wanted like $100 or something, which I'm sure at that time still is a lot of money. But he said he showed up with $100 and,
and
he got
great.
The equipment back, Bob, is what I hear.
And that's how you get through the preseason, though, right, Bob? It's, you know, pranks and fun like that during the preseason, because especially when you're having three a days and possibly a fourth one late at night, maybe, who knows, they might call it a walkthrough, but it's kind of a pseudo practice. But pranks and fun stuff like that, and guys, you know, being able to take stuff like that, it's part of it, man. It's part of camaraderie and how guys grow closer together. And, you know, once you get over the prank, then you're good, man. That's good stuff right there.
And I think that plays a bigger part in what makes a great team than people give it credit for is, you know, the relationships in between the players and having a confidence in each other that you're all there for the same thing and that you all share that vision of why you're coming to work every morning. And that was, you know, and that was always evident every year under a Shula coach team, as far as I'm concerned. We came to work. And whether it was in beginning of training camp or middle part of the season, whatever, we're coming to work and we're working towards being in the Super Bowl. You know, we always had a vision to be the best there was. And what you're talking about as far as the relationships and having fun and appreciating each other, to me, played a big part of some of our better teams.
Yeah, let's talk about some of that work you guys put in, man, especially you, man, on the field. I mean, we have a young crowd sometimes, and sometimes they don't get what some guys have done, you know, as part of being Dolphins and Dolphins, man. But, you know, I don't know how many people realize how impressive your resume is. We're talking 5 Pro Bowls, 2-time first-team All-Pro, 3-time second-team All-Pro, and, of course, you're enshrined the Miami Dolphins honor roll. Let's talk about those defenses you played on and played in, especially during the time, you know, where your guys are talking about the Killer Bees as a household name. Even me up in living in Ohio knew about the Killer Bees, man. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. And I tell you, I called about a boat this morning, you guys, and a boat broker in Florida. And he goes, are you the Bob Baumhauer who was the Killer Bee? And you know, I'm thinking this guy's 52 years old. He lives up in Stuart, Florida, and you know, in the moment, even though I always appreciated the opportunity, I think as much as anybody, I mean, I never took it for granted. You just don't realize how blessed you are to have those experiences. And whether it's playing for a guy like Coach Shula, or playing for the Miami Dolphins, or being in South Florida, I love being in South Florida. I love where I live. The relationships that you have. You know, and like this past week, I got to talk to Bo Camper. I saw Betters. I stopped and saw Betters.
Nice.
Nat, Dwight Stevenson. It's just, you can't, you just, I don't know. The blessings that I feel that I got from that are just, it's hard to put into words how blessed I feel to have had those relationships. So the things that came with that, I don't really think about that much. I remember my first Pro Bowl like it was yesterday. My first Pro Bowl was Mean Joe Green's last Pro Bowl. We played together. We started together. You know, I'm thinking, man, this is like a dream.
That's really cool.
And Jack Lambert was the linebacker. And I mean, those experiences, you just can't say enough about it. And then, you know, and I can't say enough about the fact that Coach Shula is the one that gave me the opportunity to take advantage of that. That's the way I look at it, you know. And I know a lot of people talk about, well, you didn't make the money back then. I made more money I ever dreamed I'd make as a Dolphin, right? My mom and dad are in the vacuum cleaner business. I'm playing ball for the Dolphins. I just feel blessed. But all of those things you're talking about, that's all great stuff, but it's the relationships that we all still have, to me, that really is what it's all about. And then the things we learned. I'm in the restaurant business. I use the things I learned from Coach Bryant and Coach Shula every day, every damn day. And just talking to some folks yesterday about some things that I had learned through playing ball, you know, and whether it's training camp, whether it's from playing against guys like Jim Langer and Larry Little and Kuchenberg, or playing with guys like AJ and Betters and Bo and Brzezinski and those guys, or playing relationships that we have with the Alabama gang that was there. We all stay in touch, Don McNeil and Dwight and Tony. I talked to all of them this past week, you know, so
that's great.
I can't say enough about that stuff. All the other stuff that came with that, the Pro Bowls, the Super Bowls, all that stuff. It's just, you know, that's all gravy, I guess. You know?
Yeah. That's awesome, man.
How meaningful does that must be to fans, Juice, to hear that? To hear that you guys still are so close, that those relationships you built, it wasn't just it. And I think current players, sometimes it's unfair because of free agency. It's just a different world, and the money's different. But I do think there's still guys who have close relationships. But clearly it was different in that day and age. And I think for fans who want to hold on to the purity of the game, to find out that you guys who went out there and bled on the field and who they cheered for to this day still stay in touch, I know that's got to mean a lot to fans.
Yeah, I agree with you. And when I get the opportunity to talk to some of the folks that remember us, that's one of the things you didn't see is – I didn't really see as clearly as I wish I would have is what we meant to our fans. You know, I mean, I didn't get that.
Yeah.
You know, and you're in your own little bubble there. But just talking this morning and the memories that the guy had, his name was David, about he talked about going to the games when he was a little kid and with his parents. And this is an amazing experience to be able to play for the Dolphins.
Yeah, and think about it too, Bob. It's like even then there were no Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, we know that you talk about Tampa, they were like the doormats in Florida. You know what I mean? The Heat, there were no Heat, no Marlins, you know. So South Florida meant everything. You talk about even the Bahamas, that far reaching even there. You know, I think the Dolphins had love all the way up through Atlanta, and even Atlanta was kind of divided when it came to Dolphins and the Falcons. So you guys really pretty much had all the southeastern United States, you know, and playing football like that. Like you talk about South Florida being an area when you're playing well, you're winning there, how much love you got. But you guys had a lot of love in southeastern United States.
Right. Yeah. And in fact, I used to hear a lot about how often the Dolphins were on TV in Birmingham on, you know, NBC back in the day when I was I'd get back to Alabama. They talk about how much we were on in the southeast. But I don't know. You guys seen that book that book that they did on Coach Shula, that memorial book? And I've been
fantastic
looking at the pictures and the things that Coach Shula.
Yeah, Scott Stone and the crew did an amazing job with that.
I go through that, and I just again, it just accentuates how fortunate and blessed I feel like I was just to be a little player.
No, you're a major player. Stop it, Bob. You're a major player.
A little player? Come on, Bob.
You got to forget now where I'm at now. I'm a head fry cook these days.
I know exactly where you're at in the honor roll, right? You know,
that's right.
And Coach Shula and Bob Bauer, you're in the honor roll. That's where you are, and you're not going anywhere anytime soon.
That was a big deal, I no doubt. But
when I
go through that book, and my wife was going through it the other day when we were down there, the Dolphins have such a great story. And again, that's one of the reasons I'm so excited, especially with what I saw Sunday. I mean, whether it's especially on defense, I think offense can be great. I think Tua is going to be everything that everybody wants him to be. Because first of all, he's a hell of a young man. He's got a great family. He's going to be committed to being the best that he can be, student of the game. And then, you know, it was pretty easy to see he knows where to put the ball.
Yeah.
You know, people just got to go up and get it or catch it, you know, but
well, we hope you are predicting the future here, Bob. We are all rooting for that for sure. So listen, we're going to get you out of here in a second, but I have a couple quick, a couple more questions to ask you. One of which, you've mentioned his name a couple times now. We just talked about the Killer Bees, your good friend, Kim Bocamper.
Right.
So we don't do a Fish Tank episode about any player who played in the 80s without giving Kim a little bit of a call, because, you know, he's a great storyteller and he seems to have been in the middle of all the stories. One of the things that Bo said was, he said, ask Bob about his pet lion.
Oh, okay.
And that's all he said. You know, he doesn't give me anything else. What is he talking about?
Well, and it was on one of our off days. I think Kim was with us. It was Kim and AJ and a few of us. We went up to Lion Country Safari.
Okay.
Okay, and so we go through, and you know how you drive through Lion Country Safari, sure. And then at the end, there's a petting section. So we're in the petting section. They find out we're dolphins, and they want to start taking pictures. So they start taking pictures of us with some of these lion cubs.
Oh, boy.
And I asked the question. I said, well, what kind of pets would these make? You know, and I'm, you know, what am I? I'm 24, 25. I'm bachelor. Yeah, I got no worries. Yeah. And they said they gave me a price. I think it was like 500. No, they said they make great pets. And I said, well, what do they cost? And they said $500. I gave them my phone number. I said, call me. So they call me.
Oh, jeez.
And I bought a lion. Lion Country Safari, I thought.
They tell you don't feed them. They don't say anything about taking them home, Juice. I just didn't think anybody would want
them. Well, hey, you know. So, and then, hey, at the time, AJ, a guy named Rusty Chambers, and I all lived together.
Oh, geez.
Village Oaks Apartments in Miami Lakes on Cowpen Road. I don't know if you guys know where that's at. It's right up the road from where Coach Shula's hotel is. And so the guy delivers the lion to training camp. And there's some reporters there taking pictures. And the next morning, there's a picture in the Miami Herald with me holding this lion cup up in the air. And it says Bob Baumhauer holds up his new pet lion from Lion Country Safari. And so ends up, I get a call from Lion Country Safari. I said, you didn't buy that from us? I said, yeah, I do. Yes, I did. And they said, well, we don't sell to the public. I said, well, I bought the lion. Turns out there was a little underground thing going on there.
Like, where did I get it? You know?
No, no. And you could buy those lions all day long for like $100. Because I guess lions breed well in captivity. And so anyway, I named him Oscar. He lived with AJ and Rusty and myself. I took him to practice once in a while. Took him back to Alabama, and he's growing up. My mom and dad fall in love with him. They want to keep him. I read a story in a newspaper about a lady in Dothan that had a tiger. And it's kind of like when you buy a new car, you know, you start seeing that car on the road. You don't notice it until you buy one, and you see it all the time. Same thing with owning a lion. I start seeing where a lot of people, they own these exotic cats. So this lady had a lion in Dothan, Alabama. I mean, a tiger, and she bought another tiger. They both turned on her and killed her. And so all I can think about is Oscar getting bigger and eating my parents, you know.
Right.
So,
yeah, that's not a good deal. Man.
Yeah, so I made a decision a little later. And actually, it was in combination with the grand opening for Bachelor 3. It was in 1979. So I drove back to South Florida with Oscar. I donated him back to Lion Country Safari.
Really?
Ended up in where the heck? I can't remember exactly the town he ended up. It's the middle of the state, and in a little petting zoo. But I had Lion for a while, and he was a lot of fun. And I did have some fun with him in practice.
And what were your teammates thinking when you come in to practice with a, like, we've heard about the alligator in this, in the shower story with Coach Shula.
Right.
Bring a lion to practice. The hell is that?
Yeah. And it was an experience. I mean, you know, young and dumb, you know, but I had fun with it.
Hey, Bob, when you donated him back, did they remember selling him to you then? Or were they still out?
Do I remember what?
When you donated the lion back, did they remember that they sold him to you then?
Or oh, yeah.
They still
oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah. And the reason he ended up in a petting zoo is because he didn't adapt back to Lion Country Safari.
Right.
Yeah. So they put him in a better place where he was, because he was pretty well domesticated at
right,
that time.
Right.
It was an interesting experience.
That sounds like a hell of an experience.
I would tell you to Kim would tell you to get me to tell him about that story.
That's why we call Kim. He's got all the good stuff.
He thought I was pretty crazy.
So did you watch some of that series? What was that series that was just
The Lion King.
Lion King, yeah. Yeah. Did you watch any of that?
No, I watched.
Oh, is that the Tiger King? The Lion King?
Tiger King, or whatever.
There's some sick people, man. I don't want yeah. I ain't watching that stuff.
Oh, bro. Hey, so, you know, Bob, as we talk about, you know, Bo and the Bees, you know, and I've been amazed at how you and Bo and Bob Brzezinski, you know, all become such successful restaurateurs. How say that for me, Seth? That's a big word, like mayonnaise.
Restaurateurs? Restaurateurs? Is that?
Tours. There it is. Tour.
I guess.
Yeah. Tell me how you got into the restaurant business, man, well, and build it to where it's at.
Bachelor 3 started off because of what I told you, relationship with Joe and all the above. The wing thing, we were the first ones to serve buffalo style chicken wings in the state of Alabama in 1981. And it was from a relationship with a guy named Eddie Hauck who owned Wings and Things back in the day. And he was partners with Brew in Brew's Room and got in the business and just went to a wing joint in Fort Lauderdale, fell in love with it and felt like this would be great on a college campus. Mm. So took it, brought it to Tuscaloosa, opened a little joint in 81. Took a couple of years. It took off when I retired in the late 80s, mid to late 80s, what was it, 87 or whatever. Decided to try to do that as a career and been trying to figure out ever since. But right now we're doing pretty well. We've gone from being wings. We were just wings for a long time. We have some sports-themed restaurants called Baumhauer's now, which is similar to a Bo's, Campers, or a Brzezinski's, but we're more of a restaurant. We're not as much of a sports bar. Now, we got a lot of TVs, a lot of decor, a lot of atmosphere, a lot of energy. And then we have a fine dining restaurant called Dolphins, which is in downtown Mobile. And then I have a speakeasy called Las Floriditas, which is a tribute to a place in Havana called El Floridita, which is supposedly the birthplace of the daiquiri. And then we have a little chain of restaurants called Wing Fingers, which are, I don't know if you... Up in this area, these chicken tender restaurants are becoming real popular, and it's kind of a chicken finger restaurant that's a drive-through type of thing.
Oh, nice.
So, and my son, my oldest son, Spencer, he is 28 now. He's pretty much my chief operating officer. He's doing a great job, and we're still trying to grow it. We're working on growing it, and we're fighting this damn pandemic just like everybody else is, but we're doing okay, and you know, I talked to Bo a good bit about what his challenges are. I talked to Brzezinski about what they're doing. And then I talked to Eddie off and on, too. So it's something, it's just kind of funny. Offerdahl, same thing with Offerdahl. You know, Offerdahl's Grill, right? Off the Grill.
Yep.
We all talk shop a good bit. And I think we all use our experience as ball players and the things we learned to do the things necessary, because restaurant business is tough. And you got to be pretty tough to stay in it. So that's how I got into it. And again, we're fighting the fight.
And it's all in the umbrella Aloha Hospitality. So Right. Where'd that come from? Is that from all your appearances in Hawaii?
No, I'll tell you, we were called Wings Management at the beginning, and I opened a couple restaurants that had a little bit of a Caribbean theme, and they were doing really well. And they kind of brought it up to me and said, why are we called Wings Management Company? We're not a wing joint. We're not this. We're not that. So we did a little focus group, and we talked about what business we're in, the hospitality, and we talked about what word really makes you feel good when you hear it. And Aloha came up.
There it is.
So that's Aloha nice. Hospitality.
Well, I'm rocking my shirt in honor of Aloha Hospitality. The guys were giving me a hard time, Bob, but I had to put this on. I felt good. When Wendy reached out and I answered, she said, Aloha. And I was like, wait a minute, is Bob working out of Hawaii?
And a lot of people ask that question, but it fits. I mean, you know, you go to Hawaii, that's a hell of a place to go. And you hear that word when you get off the plane, and it's sweet. You know, I don't know anybody that doesn't like hearing that word. So, and then we're in the hospitality business. We're not in the management business. We're not in the wing business. We talk about the experience that we're able to give to our guests and the hospitality piece of it. So that's where that came from. Good question.
That's awesome.
Around 2000, we made that change.
That's awesome, Bob. Man, that's great stuff, bro. Great stuff, man.
Well, we've taken up enough of your time with 13 plus restaurants or whatever it is. We know you're a pretty busy guy. So I just want to thank you. It was a real honor. Big fan of the Killer Bees as a kid. But, you know, I think playing in the nose tackle position when you're younger, you don't truly appreciate it. I think like the offensive line and those guys in the trenches, you know, it's easy to count OJ's touchdowns and his catches and his celebrations and all those things. But the guys in the trenches, sometimes you don't recognize what they're accomplishing until you take a look back afterwards. Absolutely. And so in prepping for this, it was just like, well, holy smokes, no wonder why, you know, everybody loved Bob Baumhauer. And it was just an honor to have you, man.
I'm flattered. And even with that all said, you know, I talked about not wanting to play that position. You know, you find a way to make it fun, you're going to be better at it. So I found a way to make it fun. I ended up actually liking that position. I don't know if that I'm a weirdo because of that or whatever.
A successful one.
Damn nose guard, you know.
You know, well, we can't wait to come.
Receiver, you want to be my.
That's right. That's right.
My receiver.
Yeah. And you know what?
Linebacker right now at Troy. You don't grow up wanting to be a damn nose guard. That's
right. We didn't have to worry about wham blocks either.
Really enjoyed talking to y'all. This was a lot of fun for me too. Thank you.
Yeah. We appreciate you, man. We can't wait to come visit your restaurants too in Alabama.
Well, I'll tell you what, you guys want to come up for the Senior Bowl or something. And we've got Dolphins. That's a big part of the Senior Bowl. And then Las Floriditas, that's a Cuban speakeasy that's in the basement. You got to have a password to get in there.
Well, we know the guy that can probably get it for us.
We can get that. But, Juice, if somehow we got – I don't think they're going to bring us up to the Senior Bowl, but if somehow they did, I think that Coach Flores would probably see at the high-end spot again, and we would probably be at the chicken – we'd be in the drive-thru getting the tickets. I think that's where we would
be. Make sure you get the Dolphins.
Wing fingers. We'll be over
Juice
at Wing
might
fingers.
Get brought along. I know Priest and I will be chicken fingers and fries.
I'll even spring for a little extra dipping sauce.
All right. Hey, Bob, thanks for diving in, man. We really appreciate you.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, golf fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rocking with OJ and Seth when we dive up in that fish tank. Fans with attitude. Okay, this one for them diehards. Celebrate big or cry hard. Leave it all on the field, we gon' try hard. Old school, a new school, mix it in. Feeling like we up close when we listening. Dolphins tales, in Miami is the deep end. We vibing with our favorite players, no secret. We get with Seth and McDuffie, bringing up stories we never heard to the public. Bet we love it, Dolphins fans never budget. We loyal to the team, whether happy or we upset. We be like, what's next? Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you ready for that water, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you down with Dolphins Nation, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. You looking at that fish tank, it's time to dive in. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rapping with OJ and Seth, time to dive up in that fish tank. Dog fans were at a talk, we about to dive up in that fish tank.